There was another road sign, broken in two, 3 miles down the highway. It looked like it had once given the distance to Sequoia National Park. Someone had painted something across it, but the weather had faded it to the point of illegibility. But there was fresher graffiti, neatly done in capital and lowercase letters, painted in gold, with no spelling errors. Entering the land of the children of the rock. Come in peace and be loved. Come with anger and encounter eternity. Ring any bells?
Nope.
Looks recently painted. Must be some kind of vill or group, I guess. A short distance up the road, they encounter two more hand-painted signs for the mysterious Children of the Rock.
It says, come with open arms, and the Children of the Rock will make you welcome. Come with a closed fist, and we will break you.
This one reads, the Children of the Rock will bear witness for the Blessed Savior, but first we will bear arms against followers of Shaitan. How charming.
Bible punchers. Used to be a lot of them around in the years before Skydark. Part religious crazies and part racists and part redneck rifle carriers. Fundamentalist paramilitaries.
Read about them. Some of them got triple paranoid and became nastily anti-government. Some of them turned into bombers.
Best keep a good watch. Maybe we should walk along in a skirmish line on Condition Orange.
I have a feeling we're being watched. There's someone up on the ridge to the south of us. Horseman. Take a casual glance, lover.
Nobody else look. Ryan rubbed the back of his neck and spat in the dirt. Then he turned slowly, fixing his good eye on the spot Christy had indicated. For a moment he saw nothing, just the ridge, lined with the tops of pines. Then he caught the glimmer of movement and focused on the horseman, who was astride a pinto pony. The distance was considerable, but he could make out that the man was riding bareback, in shirt and pants of light-colored cotton, with long hair and a bandana tied across his forehead.
Native American, I'd guess. Looks like an Apache. But he's sure a long way from home.
Mildred moved her head a quarter turn and looked at the figure, blurred on the Hogback Ridge. Doc also ventured a brief, nonchalant-appearing peek.
You've got better vision with your one eye than most folks with two, Ryan. I can make out a man on a horse, but he could be the Emperor Napoleon for all I can see.
At least you can see the rider, Dr. Wyeth. All I can see are some tall green trees, nothing more.
The sun was beginning to slide down behind the western slopes, creating the sort of gloaming light that Jack with his albino eyes felt quite comfortable with.
Apache, carrying long gun, sharps 50, looks to be in his 20s. Dressed like Mescalero, Caesar's watching him. Now he's riding off.
Sure enough, the horseman had kicked his heels into the flanks of the pinto, moving it off toward the north, away from the friends, and in a handful of seconds, he disappeared from sight.
You feel any others around, Christy?
No, just the one man going away, and I can hardly feel him at all now.
I got a bad feeling about this. Let's head up and move out. Find a place to camp. It looked like it might have been another picnic area back before the long winters, but there was no building, no notices, and no barbecue pits. Just stumps remained from what might have been scattered tables and seats. And much to everyone's relief, there were no messages from the mysterious Children of the Rock. A narrow river ran along its back, and Ryan and Jack checked around it for spoor, then reported back to the others.
I'd say no animals, including humans, have been here for several days.
Yeah. Looks good to me, too. But after the run-in with that panther and our friend on the pony, we best keep a careful double watch. Doc, Dean, and Jack do 10 through 1. Mildred and JB watch from 1 to 4. Christy and I will keep guard from 4 till dawn.
We hunting?
I don't think so. Light's going fast. Remember the size of the panther Mildred shielded? I wouldn't relish meeting that on a dark trail. We had plenty to eat back in the redoubt, and the river water appears to be good and clean. We can think about food tomorrow. Right now, I'd recommend sleep.
A sound suggestion. Jack, Dean, let's look alert. And to the rest of you, a fond good night.
The night had passed without incident, though Ryan had thought at one point that someone was moving stealthily in the dark woods. But he had looked carefully in among the shadows cast by the hunter's moon and seen absolutely nothing. He checked with Christy, who hadn't been able to feel any nearby presence. Now they walked with the others along a steep-sided gorge, gradually moving higher. They were following a narrow game trail that cut up the gradient, away from the rumbling of the water at the bottom of the valley. The higher they climbed, the taller the pines seemed to become. The cloudless sky was a deep, rich blue, and a refreshing breeze shifted the tall branches. A little before noon, Christy laid her hand on Ryan's arm.
Something quite close. Feels like a number of men.
Which direction?
Ahead of us, where the trail levels out onto a kind of plateau.
Christy and the others waited while Ryan crept ahead on hands and knees, the Sig Sauer drawn, moving as silent as a whisper in a midnight graveyard. There was some thick brush just where the trail flattened out, and he was able to reach it unobserved. Parting the leaves, he peered through. Christie's muti sense had been right. There were five of them, instantly recognizable as Mescalero Apaches. They sat around a small, totally smokeless fire, above which a pair of skinned rabbits roasted over a pit. They were all short, muscular men, and looked between the ages of 20 to 25. Their restless ponies were tethered at the far side of the clearing. Ryan watched them for several long seconds. They were lying down, and two of them passed a soapstone pipe backward and forward. It was obvious that they had no idea there was anyone close by watching them. The wind shifted a little, bringing the smell of roasting meat to Ryan's nostrils, and made him realize how hungry he was growing. Mentally noting that there were two more rabbits, unskinned, tossed on the ground on the far side of the fire, he wriggled back down the slope to rejoin the others. Jack looked up, his mouth open, ready to call out to Ryan, who lifted a finger to his lips to silence the teenager. He waited until he was among the others to tell them what he'd seen up the hill.
Five, all warriors, armed with hunting bows and arrows. Three have rifles of some kind. Couldn't make out the detail. Four of them have pistols stuck in their belts. They weren't exactly what I'd call on the alert.
Any food?
Rabbits. Two cooking, two unskinned. I don't reckon they'd put up a fight if we took the uncooked pair. Let's go see.
Ryan crawled on hands and knees back up the steep slope. The others spread out on either side of him. The bushes gave them all the cover they needed until they were ready to make their move at the fringe of the clearing. Less than a dozen yards away now, the one-eyed man waited a moment, checking that none of the five Apaches was aware of their presence. But they seemed completely relaxed and confident, three of them now sharing the pipe. Ryan glanced across at the others, all of them waiting for the signal to move forward, all of them with their blasters drawn and cocked. Ryan nodded, then pushed through the brush.
Nobody moves and nobody gets hurt.
For a moment, the Apache sat quite still, shocked at the sudden threatening appearance of the companions, all of them well armed.
We're kind of short on food, so we'd appreciate the loan of those two rabbits in the grass there. You agree? Well, you don't disagree.
The tallest of the Apaches narrowed his eyes and inhaled slowly.
Children of the Rock, my brothers.
Then he drew the revolver from his belt. Ryan couldn't believe what he was seeing. The Mescalero were all covered by cocked weapons and had absolutely no chance of defending themselves. And all that Ryan had asked for was a couple of rabbits. It wasn't something men would normally be willing to give up their lives for. JB started forward as stunned as Ryan, loath to gun down helpless men.
Holy shit, don't!
But the event was inexorably set. The Apaches were going for their blasters, some slower than others, as if they couldn't believe what was happening either. It was Jack who fired first.
Ah!
He hit the leader of the group in the right thigh. Massacre was the only appropriate word for what happened in the next 4 seconds. The Apaches managed a single shot in retaliation. The warriors were all down, all dead, though a couple still had twitching legs or scrabbling fingers as the lines of communication went down between limbs and brain. The air in the clearing was heavy with the smell of cordite, a haze of smoke gradually dissipating. On the spits, over the small fire, the pair of rabbits was cooking nicely. Ryan holstered his warm blaster, looking across at JB.
Now why the fuck did they want to do that?
Dark night. I couldn't even begin to guess. God damn it. We had them cold cocked. Could have blasted them from cover if we'd wanted to.
JB quickly checked the corpses, waving away the clouds of green-winged blowflies that were already gathering, drawn by the acrid pools of spilled salt blood.
Mescalero, all right. Long way from their usual hunting grounds. Those are south and east of here.
All for a couple of undersized rabbits. Why? Why on earth did they make us slay them?
Only kids, most of them. Did you hear him say the name we saw on the graffiti?
Children of the Rock?
Yeah. Their chief just said that name, and they all went for their blasters. They must have known that they didn't have a hope in Hades of making it against 7 blasters. What do you make of it, lover?
Children of the Rock? Hell's fire. I never heard of them. But not anyone we came across during the time we rode with Traitor. We ran into all kinds of weird groups. But not the Children of the Rock. I'm sure I remember a name like that.
We eating the rabbits?
Jack, leave it to you to get to the heart of the business. Maybe this didn't turn out the way we wanted, but at least we got ourselves a good meal out of it. All right, people, first things first. Keep a sharp eye and ear out in case they've got companions who might have heard the shots. And we need to get rid of these bodies, now. Then we'll eat.
They tipped the bodies into the fast-falling river, watching as the foaming water carried them southward toward the distant Pacific Ocean. Returning to the Apache camp, they polished off the 2 cooked rabbits and replaced them on the spits with the now skinned animals, tending them as the pink flesh darkened. The companions lay back in the filtered sunlight, weapons at their sides, sucking the tender meat off the fragile bones and wiping the grease from their chins. Conversation was held in abeyance until they had all finished eating.
I do most humbly beg your pardon, friends. My rumbling abdominal is simply phenomenal. Run, rabbit, run. Oh, dear me. Rabbit redux.
Think it's time we got moving, Ryan? If nothing else, it'll help this disgusting old man to get his gastric juices flowing.
As they all stood and readied themselves to get back on the trail, there was a distant rumble of thunder. Through occasional gaps in the swaying high branches, it was possible to see, far north and west, a belt of pewter clouds, scarred and seamed with purple-pink chem lightning.
Tall pines like this must be vulnerable to lightning strikes. We gonna try and make it to the old national park and see the really big trees?
I know I'd like that. How about you, lover?
Sure. Let's move out.
Fueled by the rabbit meat, they made good time along the old highway, pressing on through the clear air and gradually climbing higher. Doc suddenly stopped and sat down, pressing his knuckles to his temples, his eyes squeezed tight shut. Mildred knelt beside him.
Oh, by the 3 Kennedys, I have the most demonic headache.
Could be altitude sickness. Any other symptoms?
Well, I am a little tired. Breath short. Nausea. What more can I tell you, madam?
You've told me enough, Doc.
What's our elevation?
Feel like 8,000 or so.
Hang on. My pocket comp sextant has a genuine reading on height above sea level. Nice estimate, Jack. 7,900. Maybe we could stop early for the night and take a rest. Give Doc a chance to acclimate before we climb higher.
I am sorry to be such a crashing bore, but I can hear my pulse beating in my ears. A decidedly unpleasant sensation.
Rest is the best idea. Could be that he'll really get sick if we don't take a break.
Ryan looked around. The trail wound temporarily downhill, rippled by the quakes of Skydark. It was lined with scarlet Indian paintbrush and Sierra poppies, blazing orange against the dark green forest.
Fine with me. Should be water close by. If Doc can make it, we'll take it slow and steady. Then camp once we find the river again.
After their encounter with the Apaches, Ryan kept them to a strict skirmish line, going on point himself. With only one eye, his peripheral vision was strictly limited, and he walked cautiously, his head constantly turning. Doc seemed to recover a little as he stalked along, the wind ruffling his silvery hair. The temperature had dropped, and the sky was once more darkening ahead of them. From a few steps behind Ryan, Christy was the first to notice a figurine fixed to the flank of a stout, lightning-split pine just off the trail to the right. Ryan approached it and examined it.
It's some sort of mannequin. Looks like it might have been a child's toy at one time. But definitely not now. It's been crucified upside down to the tree. There are steel pins through the center of each hand and through the crossed ankles. It's stripped naked and it's got a coil of razored barbed wire wrapped around its loins. There's daubs of red paint that seem to represent blood, like it's been flogged.
Ryan frowned as he noticed that the figurine's face was oddly blank, with a water-stained crew cut. indifferent to the myriad tortures the body was suffering. The rest of the crew gathered around it.
Children of the Rock again?
Some sickos, that's for sure. Look at the burn marks around the groin.
It much resembles some sort of religious totem.
Yeah, could be. Seen similar things all over Deathlands.
Sickos.
Seen animals impaled into swamps. Voodoo medicine.
Oh, damnation. Not again.
Doc, you look really pale.
Forgive me, but there has been talk of stopping early to take a good rest, yes? I would appreciate that.
Fine. We'll just get a distance away from this place, then camp for the night. Hang in there, Doc.
It was a peaceful night. They built a tiny fire, and it glowed brightly in the darkness while they sat around it, talking of old days and old stories. Christy reached across and tossed a length of broken, dried timber onto the fire, sending a column of golden sparks into the velvet sky. The conversation turned to the weather. It was obvious there was a storm brewing. JB told a tale that Ryan knew from the trader days.
This was out on the open plains of old Kansas. One day the sky went dark as a beaver hat. Wind rose over the prairie from the north, and it tasted like winter ice. A flurry of hail pattered down, hard enough to sting if it hit you in the face. The cattle and horses on the farms were all spooked. They could sense that something bad was coming down on them. There was this one guy, Jersey Pollinger, had a wife and three little kids. They only moved there a few months earlier from Montclair in Jersey. He thought he knew everything. Fat, with a thin little voice, like a spoiled child. He wouldn't listen to the locals who warned him to build good and solid with a decent storm cellar for shelter against the tornadoes.
Now, I recall that a cousin of mine was once trapped in a tornado. Fascinating occurrence. She was in...
Doc!
Oh, a thousand apologies, dear friend. I have interrupted you in your story, have I not? Pray, proceed.
Sure, Doc, thanks. Anyway, this one particular day, with this storm threatening, Jersey was looking across the windswept plains. Always a wind in Kansas, drives folks insane. And out in the distance, where the sky met the land, he saw the beginnings of a twister, fat and sullen. Wide-bellied near the top, and it swept down to a sucking mouth, maybe 50 paces across.
That wide? We never got them into swamps.
Oh, yeah. Mile across at the top. This one was shimmying and plowing toward Jersey's farm. The air around them was all still, but you could hear the storm advancing, rumbling on. Jersey's wife, Lorena, came out and gave a godforsaken, feeble sort of cry when she saw death rolling in their direction. By now it was less than a mile off.
Dean lifted a hand to his face and barely managed to smother a yawn.
Jersey started looking around their yard. He was desperate to find somewhere to hide from that ravening monster heading their way. He spotted the deep well, bucket hauled up and hooked off at the top. So he called out to his wife to look after the children, and damned if he didn't run to the well. He hopped over the rim and let himself down, just disappeared from sight. Lorena stood there cursing him out loud, helpless, knowing that if he'd waited, they could have all gotten into the well and likely been saved. But as it was, his action had doomed them all to nearly certain death.
What a bastard! She should have...
Just wait a minute, Christy.
Sorry. Go on.
Lorena saw nowhere to hide, just a broken-down concrete culvert that used to be part of the cattle-feeding system, way back before Skydark. She caught hold of the little ones, dragged them after her, screaming and crying, and squeezed herself under the old trough. She pulled them after her, holding them as tight as she could. She kept her face down, like this, and she told them to close their eyes tight shut, say a prayer, and wait for the end.
This sounds like a story that's going to end in tears, John.
That tornado came down on top of them, sucking and howling like a banshee. Louder than the loudest thunder, she said. It sort of skirted past the house, and it sucked out the windows, but left the roof intact. Then it brushed past them and tugged at Lorena, ripped off most of her clothes. The sand so wild in the air, it scoured her skin. She could feel the children crying out. Not hear them, feel them. And then... just as suddenly as it arrived, the twister was gone again. She blinked open her eyes and looked out and saw it funneling its way across the prairie, off toward the east. And she could make out bits of rubbish and branches and chunks of stuff flying around in it.
I've heard tell of slivers of straw being driven clean through stout trees.
True enough, Doc. Anyway, Lorena got herself up and dusted herself and the children down and went to look for her cowardly husband. She meant to give him a real piece of her mind like he'd never heard.
Hear, hear.
So she reaches the well and peers down into it. Now the clouds are broken up, and there's bright sunlight. And I mean, you can see right down to the bottom of that well. And all the water's gone. Bone dry, sucked clear out from the bottom. The bucket and chain's gone, and Jersey Pollinger's gone. Never saw a hide nor hair of him again from that day to this. Plain vanished.
Good story.
Shh, listen.
Everyone fell instantly silent and strained to hear the noise that had attracted Jack's attention. They listened for some sound above the gentle murmur of the dying campfire. At first, there was nothing.
I hear it singing. No, more like chanting, quite close. Other side of the river.
Yeah.
Reminds me of the Gregorian chant of monks at their devotions.
Yeah, I can hear what you mean. Sort of spiritual and chilling at the same time.
Not the kind of church singing that I'm used to. Too much head in it, not enough heart. Real cold and scary.
We going to take a look?
Yeah. Could be something to do with that crucified, tortured doll back there. Might be safer to stay where we are and keep quiet.
I'd like to take a look, Lover.
Guess there can't be any harm if we keep undercover. No noises. Doc?
Yes, my dear fellow?
That especially means you.
Why, I can walk just as silent as a vaporous midnight dream, picking its tippy-toed way through an endless beach of soft sand, my dear Ryan. When the occasion merits it, that is, of course.
Then do it, Doc. Do it. Because there's something about that noise I don't much like.